with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome in to the Tuesday edition of The Drive. Bill and Dan here in the studio. Hope you're doing well. Another nice day. A little cooler today. It's really pleasant, though. I mean, if it weren't for the pollen, this might be my optimal weather. I mean, give me low 70s for a high and 50-something for a low, and I could take that just about any time, but... Yeah, the thing is, when your car is constantly yellow because of the pollen, and it affects sometimes breathing a little bit. That's something I can do without. But it is a gorgeous day. Welcome in.
And it affects your breathing because you're out in the yard doing stuff, right? I mean,
yeah,
you're trying to get some yard work done.
I try to get some stuff done this time of year, although, I mean, some of it just has to wait. I mean, there's some things that you just don't do until the pollen's gone. I mean, trim some things back, but we already had some flowers blooming. It's really tough because you love to see the azaleas around Easter. You know, you expect that, and you think of the Masters, and we don't. You know, everybody doesn't have the crew of landscapers that they do over in Augusta, and an awful lot of gorgeous azaleas already bloomed, and then we got that freeze and sort of burnt some of them back. But yeah, enjoy it, folks. Again, it has been great weather here, and looks like we're going to have really temperate weather, if not warm weather for this time of year here over the foreseeable future. It's The Drive here on this Tuesday. As I mentioned, Bill and Dan here in the studio. Drew is off today, so we've got it. I'm checking to see if we can't get Andy. Andy Burcham should be, I would think he's in Montgomery now, so checking to see if we can get him on for a few minutes here this afternoon as the Tigers getting ready to, the baseball Tigers are getting ready to take on South Alabama over at the venue formerly known as Riverwalk Stadium, now Dabo's Stadium.
Dabo's.
Is it Dabo's?
No, I think we just decided.
We called it Dabo's because it looks like Dabo Sweeney's.
Yeah, you know. pronounce it like Dabo owns the place.
We'll find out Dabo's. From Andy. Andy will know. There's no question about that. He will know the pronunciation of that and give us a little preview on here. As Auburn looking to sort of bounce back from losing the last two ball games of their weekend series against Texas.
And we're not trying to cause any confusion. So if you thought you were going to see the game at Riverwalk, right? Like if you thought you
were... you still go to that place. Yes. It is the stadium that was Riverwalk. It just was named like last Wednesday. It's less than a week old, the new sponsor, the new stadium.
Yeah, was it Biotech? Is it?
I think that's right. I'm not 100% sure.
It's a local company that bought the naming rights there to the ballpark in Montgomery, where Auburn will be playing the Jaguars tonight. So they're not playing that game at Stanky Field, right?
No,
where the Jaguars play on campus. But it's a good baseball program, right? South Alabama.
It really
is. For folks who may not know, like the Sun Belt has a couple of the top programs this season, right? You look at RPI and teams like Southern Miss and Coastal. And Arkansas State are well regarded in the numbers. Keep in mind, Coastal lost in the College World Series last year. Like they went all the way to the went all the way to the final two.
Auburn knows that very well. Yes,
right. And so I mean, there's some top notch. And then historically, South has its fair share of conference championships and appearances in the postseason. And they're a team that's done well, and you would think that, like, if you know the region, right, if you know the history of high school baseball in the greater Mobile area and...
Yeah, the Panhandle.
Yeah.
Of Florida.
And you get down the Panhandle.
East Mississippi, Southeast Mississippi.
The level of junior...
There's some really good talent.
The level of junior college ball that's played in that area, too. So, I mean, South Alabama and some of those other schools... have had some advantages there that have continued to help them to this day. And Auburn's gonna see a good South Alabama team tonight in Montgomery.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. Now they're in conference play, so you wonder. A lot of times when you're playing teams like this in the, before you get in conference play, you wonder if they will throw their ace tonight. I mean, Auburn's going to be throwing Andreas Alvarez, who has pitched as well as any ace, has an ERA barely over one, as he will take the mound for the Tigers tonight over in Montgomery. So, I haven't seen who's going for South. Didn't check really this afternoon.
So looking at South Alabama's website and reading their preview, Hayden Odell is a lefty who is
That's a good idea against Auburn. Auburn has been struggling against lefties lately.
Mobile area guy who transferred from the University of New Orleans and is in his first year with the Jags and has a they list him with a he's 1-0 with a 4.74 ERA. I don't know how many.
Right.
I don't have his stats for this season. Oh, hold on. He's been their midweek starter.
Okay.
This year it's his fifth midweek start. He started against Alabama in the midweek.
They beat Alabama.
Okay, so he went 5 innings with 7 Ks in the no decision, only allowing 2 runs before the Jaguars pulled away late to win 6-3. He struck out 8 in 5 2/3 against UAB. And the Jaguars are 5-0 this year when he starts.
That's going to be quite the pitching matchup because Dre Alvarez has been very, very good for Auburn. So could be another low-scoring ball game. I mean, Auburn would love to get the bats cranked up. But if this is another really tough lefty, it could be a pretty low-scoring game. And for Alvarez, it seems like, for teams, get him early or you're in trouble. I mean, he's a guy that once he gets – once he gets into his rhythm, he's been very difficult. So that'll be coming up tonight over on Wings 94.3, airtime 5:45, and first pitch around 6.
Yeah, Jags just won a series against ULM over the weekend. They've got 16 wins, and sometimes programs like that will, I mean, a quad one game, a game like this, an opportunity against Auburn. It's a.
Well, like I said, since they've got a win already over Alabama, they could pretty much claim the state championship. They've beaten UAB and Alabama. If they beat Auburn tonight, they claim they're state champs.
Sure, although they will see the Troy Trojans later this year as customary in conference play. But you're right. No, South Alabama would be, I mean, on top of like local bragging rights, like a 17th win tonight would be a really impressive one for a Sun Belt team.
Well, how many have they lost? I mean, most teams have only played 24, 20, something like that games?
They're 16-8,
okay.
three and three.
That's a pretty good guess.
3-3 in Sun Belt play, yeah.
Okay, so yes. So that'll be coming up, and hopefully we'll be able to talk to the voice of the Tigers, Andy Burcham, here. I'm waiting for a response. I'm sure he's at the ballpark getting set up for the game. Hopefully he will have time to talk with us. It's Tuesday. That means we'll catch up with Jake Crane in hour number 2.
I think a testament to South Alabama's strength in baseball, too, is that they lead – the series all time against Auburn 50-31.
That is pretty impressive.
I mean, so it's and now Auburn's 81 games dating back to 1968 between these two teams.
And that's not long after South started their program.
Right. Auburn's won 7 of the last 10, including they beat South 13-5 last year when Auburn was the number 11 team in the country. They've played the last couple of these in Montgomery, South with a 50-31 edge overall in the series.
That is very impressive. That tells you South Alabama has a strong baseball history. They've had quite a few major leaguers. One that just immediately comes to mind is Luis Gonzalez, the former Diamondback and Astro and World champ with the D-backs. They had the series winning base hit for the D-backs back a few years ago. They've had a strong program through the years. But this Auburn team, despite losing 2 of 3 to Texas this past weekend, is, I think, as talented an Auburn team as I can recall.
Brendan Donovan went to South Alabama as well, who started, you know, was an all-star last year, is now a...
Now, traded to, was it White Sox?
He's in Seattle.
Seattle.
But he was on the White Sox for, was on the
Cardinals.
On the Cardinals for a while. Yeah. John Lieber was a...
Was
South Alabama Jaguar. Like, they've put several notable names, especially for, like, baseball sickos, Juan Pierre.
Yep.
Was a South Alabama Jaguar. So I mean, there have been some guys who, you know, the folks know for sure who've blossomed from, you know, coming from Mobile.
Oh yeah. All right. So hopefully we can catch up with Andy, but we've got quite a bit to talk about.
David Freese.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there was a second baseman too.
Some good names. Yeah.
Yeah. There are. I mean, there have been a few. We've got a good bit to talk about, you know, Auburn getting ready, for its, quarterfinal NIT game against Nevada tomorrow night. Stephen Pearl, as a matter of fact, just met with the media. Didn't get a chance to get to that because, it was going to be at 1:45 today and they moved it back to 3:30. So we'll see if we can find Stephen's, comments, before the show's over, maybe let you hear those. Or if we don't get to them today, we can do them tomorrow. And then today we had an opportunity to hear Alex Golish and three of the Auburn football players today after their fourth practice of the spring.
Yeah, what'd you think of getting the opportunity to talk with Coach Golish and what he had to say about practice today?
I thought it was about what you would expect. He talked about how much energy and how he was actually pleased at how well the first 3 days of practice went last week. You get a weekend, you get back out there today, and he said today was the day that he'd been sort of expecting that there was going to be, you know, something bad. And he said, about midway through practice, he let them know.
I will say what strikes me about this group is it doesn't seem like there's a ton of mystery.
No.
As far as the depth chart, or like it feels like guys have been brought in for pretty specific roles this year, right? And I mean, you could have a young player emerge. That's not to say everything's set in stone and the die is cast, but like you've got, you know, it feels like in a lot of these positions, if you'd asked me a couple of weeks ago, like sort of like, well, what are we going to be thinking a couple of weeks in? Feels like it's the usual suspects. Pretty much ever. That's not a knock.
No.
Because I think that's probably what you want when you're assembling a roster. It felt like, especially like you think back to year one of Freeze. I think maybe part of that was because he got hired later in the cycle, right? And it's like, like now you're and especially with Harsin, like that first year with Harsin, where it's just like this roster feels like a crapshoot. Like I mean, you're
he wasn't sure that Bo Nix was his quarterback. Remember?
Yeah, I mean, right? It's like there was uncertainty and there was mystery, which made made spring more intriguing, I suppose, because you're watching all these position groups and who's going to emerge. Feels like we kind of know who's going to emerge at a lot of these spots.
What I think is good is players that were targeted to be the starters seem to be doing well.
Yeah.
We're hearing hearing Alex Golish talk about players at positions, and he's bringing up the names that were brought in to be the starter. That doesn't mean there's not competition, because there is. There's a lot. I think this team has much more depth than last year's team. But it appears, at least early on, that the guys they targeted to come in and fill in and project as starters are off to good starts.
And that means there's a chance offensively when you're talking about, like, if you ask me to assemble like the first 11 right now, who I think will be out there, you know, the first time Baylor, you know, Auburn takes on Baylor in the game in Atlanta. Jeremiah Cobb might be the only one who was on last year's team.
Yes, I think he would.
It could be Jeremiah.
On offense, he's absolutely the most likely player from last year, and I would say he will be. And there might be some others that you could. Okay, Andy, by the way, is ready, so we can get to break.
Let's do that.
We'll talk more about football a little later, but we'll catch up with the voice of the Auburn Tigers, Andy Burcham, after our first break here on the Tuesday Drive.
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck. 11390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email The Drive at espnau.com.
Welcome back into the Tuesday Drive. Bill and Dan here in the studio, and we're pleased to be joined now by the voice of the Auburn Tigers over in Montgomery, getting ready for Auburn and South Alabama at a ballpark that has just been renamed within the last week. And we're going to rely on our good friend Andy Burcham to settle the question, is it pronounced like Dabo Swinney or is it Dabo's Park now, Andy?
It is Dabo's.
It is like Dabo Swinney. Okay. Dabo Swinney. We will. That's the easy way to remember it. That's when I saw that, I went, gee, has Dabo bought the stadium rights there in Montgomery?
We do. Yeah, we're not prepared to report that there's any other link between Coach Swinney and this biotech company that now has the naming rights.
I've been told that this is a tech company out of Maryland. Now, what their connection is to minor league baseball or the Biscuits or the city of Montgomery, I do not know, other than it is no longer Riverwalk Stadium, which if you say that really fast, you can screw that up. It's now Dabo's Park.
Yeah, there you go. Regardless, it is a very nice venue.
Yes, it is. And they do a lot, and there's a lot that goes on.
Yes.
You know, that for a number of years now, it has served as the eventual championship home of Alabama High School Baseball, which is a fabulous venue for this. After, I don't know, how many years, Bill, was it?
At Patterson
Field, yeah. Just down the street here.
Right.
Much better venue for it here. And ballpark looks great. They're 2 weeks away from opening the Montgomery Biscuits season. So this will be a bit of a tune-up. They played USA, played UAB 2 weeks ago, I understand, here. So getting ready for a good one tonight between the Tigers and the Jaguars.
Yeah, we were looking a little while ago, and South is throwing their regular midweek starter who pitched very well against Alabama, and seeing that they're unbeaten when he takes the mound.
They beat Alabama here they beat Alabama not here, but they beat Alabama last weekend down in Mobile 3-1. Alabama has turned it around since then with that sweep this past weekend of the Florida Gators. And that's, of course, where Auburn heads this weekend is Tuscaloosa. So, you always know when you're playing South Alabama. In any sport, you're in for a battle. It was like that with basketball last week in the NIT in the first round. And every year when Auburn plays South in baseball, it is going to be that way. It was that way for softball. As well, down in Mobile last week. So you get ready for a very good team that, in all likelihood, like Auburn, will be in the NCAA tournament come May.
Andy, what was the mood around the team after the Texas series this weekend? Because I think that my guess would be this is a team that really wanted to take at least two of three from the Longhorns, but at the same time, you come away from that series, I think, believing Auburn can play with anyone. And just yesterday on the show, I mean, we were talking about, it's been 48 years since a regular season conference champion. And even having just dropped two of three at home, you still feel like this is a team that has as good a chance as any in, correct me if I'm wrong, Bill, decades? Like this team's had as good a chance.
Oh, yeah, I believe that.
As good a chance as Auburn's had in a long time of maybe winning a share of the SEC regular season title.
Well, let's take a look at it from a different perspective. I mean, take a look at last week for Auburn baseball. You go 2-2 against the number two and three teams in the country. All right, you go 2-2 with those teams. You win a game convincingly against Georgia Tech at Plainsman Park a week ago tonight. And then you win the first game of that series against Texas in thrilling fashion. You lose game two in thrilling fashion with the tying run and the winning runs at second and third when that game came to a close. And then Sunday, Texas just outpitched Auburn and won that game convincingly by a score of 6-0. So if you look at the week, I think you've got to be pleased with the week. You look at the weekend, however, you're at home. It's a top five team. It's a record crowd. On the first 2 days, the first two nights of the series, it turns out to be the biggest crowd in Auburn history for a series, and so you're a little bit disappointed with that. And you come within an eyelash of winning that series, and yet when you lose that series and you've already beaten Georgia Tech, you drop one spot in the rankings. I think that from a national perspective, it gives you an idea of how this team is viewed, and the fact that it was the number three team last Tuesday and the number two team in town last week. Now, listen, there's no question this team was disappointed. I mean, just listen to Butch Thompson's postgame show on Sunday. Auburn had an opportunity to win that series. And I think in Butch's mind, feels that Auburn should have won that series, whether it was that Sunday rubber game or one that won that game in another dramatic walk-off fashion on Saturday night. But I believe that he believes this has the makings to be a very special baseball team.
Yeah.
No one will play a tougher schedule than Auburn. They play it in the toughest league in the country, and there's not even a close second to that right now. And there's no room to sit back and just kind of relax against anybody in this league, period, every week. You're facing among the best teams in the country. It's like a super regional every week. Put it in that perspective. When Auburn gets to Southeastern Conference, when anybody gets to Southeastern Conference play, certainly Auburn with the non-conference schedule that it has already played, that it continues to play home and home against Georgia Tech, home and home against Jacksonville State, the three games it played in Texas, the Cincinnati game, this game against South tonight, the home and home against Samford, the home and home against UAB. You know, Auburn will go anywhere and play anybody. I mean, Texas, that was the first time they'd been out of the state. The first time they had played a true road game was last weekend when they came to Auburn. So Auburn doesn't dodge anybody. Butch Thompson certainly doesn't dodge anybody in the state. And that's one of the reasons that we're here tonight. This has become a tradition. Auburn has played this game or a game of this magnitude in Montgomery each and every year. Of course, it started with Auburn in Alabama. Alabama dumped out of that series. That was all Alabama. Auburn continues to come to Montgomery and has played the likes of Troy in South Alabama tonight. It's the Jaguars of South Alabama.
Going to be interesting to see. I mean, South Alabama going with a lefty, and Auburn lately has struggled a little bit against lefties. Now, I mean, it's not that they haven't gotten some hits. It's been maybe more batting with runners in scoring position, but this is going to be an interesting matchup tonight with Andreas Alvarez, who has just been fabulous here in midweek against the Jags.
An ERA of, I think, just of 1.09.
Yeah.
And he was sensational a week ago against Georgia Tech. And he has had the propensity to struggle a little bit out of the gate.
Mm-hmm.
And that first inning can be a bit of an adventure. It was not even that against Georgia Tech. And it doesn't need to be that tonight against South Alabama. That's how good this ball club is. You struggle out of the gate against South Alabama, you can be down a bunch by the time you come to the plate in the bottom half of the first. But he has been terrific for Auburn in the midweek. A guy that I think Auburn thought would be one of the weekend guys through the fall, and it just didn't work out for him. But he has become... Well, he's become unbeatable so far in the midweek. And if Auburn, you know, if he continues to be your fourth starter and you still haven't pitched Griffin Graves yet, I like Auburn's starting rotation at this point. Now, listen, Jackson Sanders struggled a little bit on Saturday. Alex Petrovic, you know, as that game went on, struggled a little bit as well. Marciano Friday night was terrific,
and
Alvarez was really good last week. But if that rotation continues to excel and you get that kind of depth, and Bill, you know this, you've called these games, when you get to the tournament, you need more than three starters.
Mm-hmm. No question.
And a fourth quality starter could mean a difference of you going on and playing the next weekend, whether it's the Super Regional or Omaha Nebraska.
Yeah, and you mentioned Griffin. He's getting closer, Andy. What's the expectation when he's going to be back?
That's a good question. I do not know beyond the fact that when Butch Thompson met with the media last Thursday,
right,
he mentioned that Griffin was getting ready for his first bullpen. And it was a lat muscle, I think, that hit him before the season began. But, you know, the part of the good news was that he is starting to throw again. Now, when he returns and that progress, I don't know at this point. But, Auburn got another guy back that had a torn ACL in the fall, and that's Madrigal at first base. And he got his first at bat of the weekend.
And his first extra base hit?
A potential rally. Yeah, a big double in his first at bat. And I'm telling you, when he went down, he was Auburn's first baseman in the fall with some power and some leadership ability. And losing him, that was a big blow. Now, listen, Ethan Bingaman has been terrific for Auburn at first base. And that, you know, there are times when you can gain through an injury. Because when that player comes back, all of a sudden you've got someone else that is playing in that spot and playing well, and that's what we can say about Bingaman. But they like Madrigal, and we'll see we do not have a lineup yet, but we'll see if he's in the lineup for Auburn tonight at first base.
Going to be really interesting. Andy, can you stick with us for a little bit? Love to talk a little basketball. All right, let's get to our bottom of the hour break, and we'll shift over to the court when we come back here on the Tuesday Drive.
Or email the drive at espnau.com.
Welcome back into the Tuesday Drive. Bill and Dan here in the studio, and we have Andy Burcham, voice of the Auburn Tigers, with us for one more segment. Talked a little baseball. Basketball season continuing as the Tigers now to the quarterfinals of the NIT, hosting Nevada tomorrow night. Andy, I thought... Auburn did what they needed to do against Seattle. They came out and were sharp from the outset. You didn't see any slow start the way you did against South Alabama. And my goodness, the younger guys, this is why you play in an NIT. For some of the people that wondered why you would do this, to see the continued improvement from Elijah Freeman and then Sebastian Williams-Adams and Philip Jovich the other night combining for 26 points, I thought was really impressive.
Ron Dan, number six for Seattle, had to see Sebastian Williams-Adams in his dreams
right
the other night, because Sebastian Williams-Adams just went right at him. I mean, I hear Stephen Pearl talking with his ball club about scoring through someone's chest, playing physical basketball, and Sway took that to heart. The big from China or Seattle University couldn't do anything about it. And then when he did that, we saw other Auburn players do that. I thought that's one of Auburn's best first halves of basketball in quite some time.
Right.
Now listen, Seattle University hit a ton of threes in that ball game, and that has been, if there's an Achilles heel defensively for this Auburn team, it's that. And they will get tested tomorrow night.
Indeed.
From the 3-point stripe with Nevada coming to town. I was pleased with the way Auburn played. I thought Auburn was much more engaged, much more fired up to play that ball game Sunday night than it was the ball game last week in the first round of the NIT. And they need to be that tomorrow, because Steve Alford brings a good ball club in that already has 24 wins. They won 14 games in the Mountain West this year. Auburn will be as big as Nevada, at least across the starting lineup tonight or tomorrow night. But, and Bill, I do not remember a year recently when we have seen as many elite point guards that Auburn, and let's add Tahad Pettiford, of course, into that list. But you see two elite point guards out there every single night. And for Nevada tomorrow, it's Corey Camper Jr., grad student from Little Rock, that is averaging 16.8 points, 4.8 rebounds, and 2.6 assists per ball game. And then you add Tayshaun Comer, who is a senior at 6'1", and he is averaging 3.6 assists per ball game. And the Camper kid had a triple double against Liberty last Saturday: 10 points, 13 rebounds, and 10 assists. So it's another game where all will be going up against elite guards, and it's a three guard lineup with Camper, Vaughn, Weems, not Lanch, Vaughn, Weems, who comes in. They all average double figures in scoring. Camper is almost 5 rebounds a ball game, and so this will be a very, very tough battle for Auburn tomorrow night to get to Indianapolis, and a spot where Auburn has never been. Auburn has never been past the quarterfinal round of the NIT. So Auburn has a chance to make history tomorrow night.
Yeah, and hopefully a good crowd on hand. 8 o'clock game tomorrow. At least it's not that 9 o'clock like we had last week.
I thought it was a better crowd on Sunday.
It was.
A lot of folks
definitely
took advantage
was.
Of both. Came well, across from baseball, and I thought the crowd was bigger. I thought the crowd was more into it as well. And hopefully it's a big, big crowd with nothing conflicting tomorrow night, other maybe than choir practice.
Yeah, so hopefully that's over. I mean, since it's an 8 o'clock game, so yeah. I mean,
softball does play tomorrow night, but that game will likely be almost over as well by the time Auburn basketball plays tomorrow night.
Yeah, and now tomorrow, one thing that I was concerned about, Seattle's height, but Auburn dominated. I mean, Auburn dominated them.
I agree.
Inside,
it didn't hurt that their 7-footer picked up 2 fouls in the first
right.
3 minutes of the game
mm-hmm.
and was never a factor for the rest of the night, ever.
No, but the fact that Auburn finished the game and Tahad had 5 points in the last 3 minutes with neither Tahad Pettiford or Keyshawn Hall scoring in double digits and won.
Well, Keyshawn Hall didn't shoot a free throw.
No.
I'm not sure that has happened all season long in a game, for goodness sakes. He's still sitting at 222 free throws this season.
That's crazy.
But he did have a career high 15 rebounds
and 5 assists
in the ball game. Right, exactly.
Yeah,
so it was a different kind of elite game for Key than what we're used to, but it was a very good game nonetheless.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Andy, I think if you're Seattle, like you'll take. I mean, I think they would have assumed victory with the numbers that Keyshawn Hall and Tahad Pettiford put up. You know, the thought of causing those two guys to have such an inefficient night.
5 for 21 between the two.
Yeah, 5 for 21 combined, and yet Auburn. I think that speaks to the job that the supporting cast. You know, the job that some of the other starters did. What a game for Elijah Freeman, and what a last couple of games he's put together. Sebastian Williams-Adams doesn't miss a shot and makes some really heads-up plays with the ball as well.
Yeah, that's 15 points, tied the 15 points that he scored in the season opener against Bethune-Cookman in Sway. And let's not forget the 23 points that, oh, by the way, Kevin Overton.
Yeah, I was going to say.
He has been as good as anybody from three-point land. He is in a groove. For this ball club right now.
He really is, Andy. I was going to say, just convince him it's the second half to start the game. My goodness, he has been on fire in the second half lately.
Yes, he has.
Yeah, so that's hopefully a good crowd on hand tomorrow night for that. I mean, we've got there's so much going on. We had a chance to spend a little time with Alex Golish and some players today as spring football practice continues. A very busy, busy time. Andy, update everybody on what's going on with the Auburn Sports Network.
Well, this is week number 2, the second part of our interview with Andrew Warsaw, Auburn football's general manager. On Monday, you'll hear from Jared Benko, who's Auburn's executive assistant or associate athletic director, just talking about his route back to Auburn. Had been here before. His athletic department career began primarily in finance, but it is blossomed into much more. He comes to Auburn after a 4-year stint as athletic director at Georgia Southern. We'll be sitting down with Auburn's head coach of Auburn wheelchair basketball, Robbie Taylor, tomorrow. That goes out in a couple Mondays. They're about to go to the Nationals in Tucson, Arizona, as the national number 2 seed. They only lost one game all season. So they're going to try and win a national championship in Auburn wheelchair basketball.
Great.
So that's what's coming up in the next couple weeks on the Talking Tigers podcast. We have a Tiger Talk for you on Thursday night at this point, scheduled to be with us. It is a show from our studio. You will hear from Auburn equestrian coach Jessica Braswell as they get ready to host the SEC championships Friday. At the Auburn Equestrian Park, where admission is free. You'll also hear from, you will hear from Butch Thompson. You will hear from Chris Malvo. You will also hear from Stephen Pearl, all on Tiger Talk on Thursday night. And then this weekend, it's Auburn baseball at Alabama, 6 o'clock on Friday, 7 o'clock on Saturday, and 1 o'clock on Sunday. And then hopefully we're talking about Auburn's return trip to Indianapolis and my first ever trip to Hinkle Fieldhouse for the semifinals of the National Invitation Tournament next week.
I hope you get that opportunity, Andy.
I do too.
Yeah, really appreciate you spending a little bit of time with us. Looking forward to the broadcast tonight against South Alabama.
Yeah, we're on the air tonight at 5:45. Brad Locke, by the way, Brad is on our basketball broadcast tomorrow night. He makes a return trip to Auburn basketball tomorrow evening. So we're looking forward to having Brad on the call with Randall Dickey and yours truly tomorrow evening. We'll be on the air at 7:30, 5:45 tonight from Davos Park in Montgomery.
All right, Andy.
On Wings 94.3.
Great, Andy. Thanks again, man.
My pleasure, guys. Have a great day. War Eagle.
Voice of the Tigers, Andy Burcham, joining us here on the Tuesday Drive. Yes, baseball tonight, basketball tomorrow night. We'll talk whatever you'd like when we come back here on the Tuesday Drive.
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck.
Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
Spring is right around the corner, and University Ace has everything.
8382-7502 or email the drive at espnau.com.
Welcome back into the Tuesday Drive. Bill and Dan here in the studio. Our thanks to Andy Burcham, voice of the Tigers. He's over in Montgomery at Dabo's Field. I think it's Dabo's. I don't think it's Dabo's.
Dabo's.
It's not like Dabo with an apostrophe S. like as if many people knew where to put the apostrophe. For tonight's Auburn-South Alabama baseball game, again, you can hear it over on Wings 94.3. Starting at 5:45, first pitch around 6.
Yeah, busy next couple of days for the Auburn Sports Network on Wings 94.3. You can catch tonight's baseball game tomorrow night.
You got baseball tonight, basketball tomorrow, Tiger Talk Thursday.
And then
baseball Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
And then baseball this weekend with the Alabama series.
Now basketball, if Auburn wins tomorrow night, the next game would be April 2nd at Hinkle in Indianapolis. So you'd go a week. As the NCAA now controls the NIT. So they're making sure that you're not having NIT games being played when NCAA games are being played as it gets down the stretch.
Yeah, for some reason, I thought that the NIT could be played on Friday and Sunday. So the Final Four is played on Saturday and the championship's on Monday.
Yeah.
And I wonder if the NIT semis, to avoid run-up to the Final Four games and the national championship game, I wonder if they might play those semifinal games in Indianapolis on either Thursday or Friday before the Final Four. And then it would make sense to play the championship on the day between.
Yeah. Is that when the women's is, though?
That's when a lot of things are.
Yeah.
Like that's when you've got the women. That's when I think some of the D2 championships. So it would make sense. Maybe
you play. It's like April 2nd for the semis and April 5th, which is the day before, which is Sunday. Sunday is the championship.
I mean, we'll have a final. It's crazy to think. We'll have a Final Four on Sunday night.
Yes.
This is the Sweet 16 starting on Thursday. And you know that there are two of these 16 teams from Thursday and Friday are going to four of these teams are going to win the next are going to win all weekend.
And you've got four SEC teams among the Sweet 16.
You've got four SEC teams, and because of Florida's loss, I feel like you have a bracket that feels more up for grabs
in the
region that doesn't have an SEC team in it with Iowa, Nebraska, and then Illinois, Houston, and the winner of those two games playing on Saturday,
right?
Like I think you've got but then on the other side you've got Arkansas, Arizona, and Texas, Purdue. That's the West region. Feels like both SEC teams are pretty significant underdogs.
I would think so.
I would think they
should be.
Yeah, I don't want to write off Arkansas by any stretch. I think Arizona is a safe bet to win the whole thing.
I agree.
If Arkansas beats Arizona, Arkansas can beat just about anybody in this entire draw. A win over Purdue would be really impressive for Texas. You still have to deal with the other side of the West region, which is likely Arizona. But you know, it'd be a really nice win.
It's been
for
a heck of a run for Sean Miller and the Horns here.
Yeah,
I mean, because a lot of people didn't didn't think they should get in. I mean, I've been an attorney.
Actually, that was one of the things, and you know, again, not to argue too much about why Auburn could have been in the NCAA tournament, but I thought one of the things that played in Auburn's favor when you were making the case was that head to head, Texas's resume wasn't all that much better.
No,
right, and maybe in fact it was weaker.
No, they hadn't played the schedule that Auburn had played
and had lost head to head to Auburn, among other things. So I mean, I thought that it wouldn't have been all that difficult to leave Texas out and give that spot to Auburn.
That's where if Auburn had just won one more game,
it might have been Texas on the outside looking in, and Auburn jumping in and taking that spot in the first four. Instead, Texas gets the opportunity and runs with it. Mm-hmm. Wins three games, and now they're in the Sweet 16 with a chance against Purdue. I tell you, the Iowa win over Florida is really impressive.
It really is.
But Nebraska is, I mean, that team feels like they can beat just about anybody. Right, with the way they pass, the way they shoot, the different options they've got, they are. Now you can go cold and you can lose any game in that situation too. But they seem like they are, you know, like you said, it's kind of goofy for a four seed from the Big Ten to be
feel like a long shot or a Cinderella.
But no, I think if Nebraska's playing Houston in the Elite Eight, it'll feel like Nebraska's a Cinderella, certainly compared to a Houston team that's been, you know, they've been a pretty regular presence in the NCAA tournament in the later stages of the NCAA tournament for the last few seasons under Coach Sampson.
Yeah, Nebraska won the college basketball crown last year, and they are showing they are legit. This year, we talked about that tournament the other day. I mean, that's one that doesn't even start until April. With the teams that aren't in the NCAA or NIT, and I believe isn't Oklahoma in it? I think Oklahoma turned down an NIT bid to play in the college basketball crown, which is interesting. It's the NIL postseason tournament, which I think has got a chance to, you know, maybe make a dent there with the NIT.
Yeah, I'm curious to see what sort of
just eight teams in it, I believe, this year. They had 16 last year.
Yeah, I'm curious to see what sort of
Oklahoma is in it.
What sort of interest there is? What sort of appetite there is for college basketball crown action? I like the model of incentivizing non-NCAA tournament postseason play with NIL money, but I also like, you know, it's like, I mean, the players era is dealing with the same sort of thing where it's like at some point the money faucet's got to turn on the other way, and
right,
like this has to prove to be a money maker
for the folks that are doling the money out right now.
Exactly.
But I mean, there were as many or more Power Four teams in the CBC of eight, mm-hmm, than there were in the NIT with 32.
Oh, and I could see why, especially if you're a power conference team that went, and this is not Auburn, but like if you're one of these teams that went senior heavy, and you know that next year's roster is going to be a lot different, I could understand why some of those players might prefer to play in the NIL tournament rather than in a field like the NIT. With Auburn, I could see why something like the NIT might be a little bit more attractive. You know, I don't know.
Yeah, when you've got players that could be returning next year. And the other thing about the CBC is apparently it's NIL for the current players, but there's also an NIL that is matched with money for the team's NIL the following year. And I believe this year it's $500,000 to the winning team.
So interesting that we're talking about a lot of days of action in a row.
Mm-hmm.
For Auburn men's basketball and Auburn baseball with the NIT action, and then of course Auburn baseball playing a pretty loaded week with the visit to Dabo's Park tonight, and then Alabama this weekend up in Tuscaloosa.
All right, we're halfway done here on the Tuesday Drive. Don't forget, Jake Crane joins us at the bottom of the hour. Until then, we're wide open. Give us a call, 334-321-1390, as we take our top of the hour break here on the Tuesday Drive.
Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome into hour number two of the Tuesday Drive. Bill and Dan here in the studio, and we'd love for you to join us. In the studio even. No, the doors are locked, so you can give us a call. 334-321-1390. That's the Drive hotline sponsored by Skybar. Anything you want to talk about sports-wise, we had Andy Burcham, voice of the Auburn Tigers, on with us in hour number one. Talk some baseball and basketball with him. NIT basketball and Auburn baseball as the Tigers get ready to South Alabama tonight over in Montgomery at Dabo's Park, formerly Riverwalk Stadium. And then, of course, Auburn basketball will host Nevada tomorrow. Do you say Nevada or Nevada?
I think it's Nevada, right?
I say Nevada. I always have, but I mean, you know,
you
a lot of folks
say Nevada.
Say, and I say Nevada. We'll call
I
the whole
say
thing off.
Nevada.
Tomorrow night, 8 o'clock.
You say
over
tomato,
at Neville Arena.
I say Tomata.
Tickets. I got a ticket today for my wife, and I hope they're right. Hope it's not just a sales tactic saying, "Hurry, limited supply." So I hope those tickets are going pretty well for tomorrow night's matchup as the winner there goes to the Final Four of the NIT in Indianapolis.
All right, so my brief internet research about this says that the local pronunciation is Nevada.
That's what I thought.
But then it's common for folks to think that you would read it like a Spanish word, right, and treat it like Nevada, which is
yes,
like, and apparently that is a word in Spanish meaning snow-capped.
And that's where I would have thought that it came from.
But the preferred pronunciation from folks in the area, yeah, you rhyme the second vowel with bad.
You realize this is the first ever meeting between Auburn mm-hmm. and Nevada.
And it's
either one of them. That's the first time
Auburn's
played
ever
Nevada,
played either
first
of them before.
Ever played Nevada.
Yeah, and for and another basketball coach, where I mean this is now three games in a row in the NIT where it's. Of all the different teams that could be in the NIT, you know, it's 350-something mm-hmm. Division I programs, right? And it's like, I talked to Richie Riley in Pensacola during the Sun Belt tournament. His team was in the same hotel as the Troy women before they were eliminated. I went to that game. I went to Georgia Southern and South Alabama when they gave up 23 threes, and then Auburn plays South Alabama in the first round of the NIT. I saw Seattle courtside in Thanksgiving week when they played in the Resorts World Classic, the same tournament Troy played in, and then I see Seattle in the second round of the NIT. And like Steve Alford was the coach at UCLA, you know, mm-hmm. when I was living out there, and I went to Bruins games all the time. I mean, and this guy, I mean, he's been around for. I mean, he was the coach at Iowa when he was in his 30s and right. the mid 90s. And has been a pretty significant presence in college basketball for the last few decades, and yeah, crazy to think that he's going to square off with Auburn, and the winner's going to the semifinals of the NIT.
I doubt that there are an awful lot of people that could name the other six teams that are still alive. Auburn's the only Power Four school left in the NIT tournament. That was pretty redundant. NIT tournament. I hate when people say SEC conference in the NIT. But Illinois State and Dayton will play in one of the other quarterfinals. New Mexico will take on St. Joe's, and then Tulsa and Wichita State play in the other quarterfinal. Those are your eight teams in the NIT that are left. We had an let's see. So we can talk about that if you'd like. Talk some baseball if you'd like. We had a chance today to spend a little time with Alex Golish and a few of the Auburn football players after practice today. It was the fourth practice of the spring, and yes, Alex Golish was.
Is Anthony Grant still the coach at Dayton? You mentioned Dayton
I
as
think
one
he
of
is.
the as one of the coaches that's still alive. Yeah, well, how about that?
Yeah,
could see him later.
Yeah, no kidding. That's right. That would be the next matchup. The winner of the Dayton Illinois State mm-hmm. game is who the Auburn Nevada winner plays in Indy.
And he replaced Archie Miller, mm-hmm. and of course we were just talking about Sean,
his brother. Yeah.
Sean is the head coach of Texas and in the.
Archie was always a little hotter than Sean.
Archie's a head coach. He is the head coach at Rhode Island still after it didn't work out. Didn't work out at Indiana.
No.
That's where he left Dayton to take over in Indiana, and now is at URI. And I think he's won some games at URI, but it's the A-10 feels like they've had some success, that family, in that league.
Mm-hmm.
What did you think of getting to hear from Coach Golish today? And I've got that audio if you want to.
Yeah, we'll run that for you. How long is it? It didn't seem like it was terribly long today. 10 minutes. We got time. We can go ahead and run it now, as a matter of fact, and let you draw your opinions as to how Alex Golish felt about day four of all more contact and everything through the spring. But yeah, Alex Golish, not really down, but I mean sort of expecting there to be a little bit of a lull at some point, and felt like that's the way it was at the start of practice, but felt things picked up. So that's some of the comments from him today after practice. We had a chance to talk to some of the players. You were over with Cody Sigler, right?
I was talking with Big Joe.
Oh, no, that's right. You had Joe Simmons.
I had Big Joe Simmons, who I thought had some really interesting stuff. He was talking with me and Jason Caldwell. J.G. Tate was over there. He mentioned that a big reason why he's, and we could run some of the audio from it, you know, probably in the next segment, but big reason why Simmons feels like he's where he is now is because Kurt Cignetti saw something in him when Cignetti was back at JMU.
Yeah.
And identified, you know, talked about some of those guys that are now significantly more well known than they were a couple of years ago in college football as big influences on him and his career. And I think he's you know, he certainly looks the part of a starting tackle for
an SEC.
I mean, and is a guy too who, I mean, it's a jump. You know, a lot of these guys are making that jump from the mid-majors or a different conference into the SEC, but a lot of guys have shown that they're ready to make that jump mm-hmm. in the last few years of college football, and you know, even at the line of scrimmage. And so I think someone like Joe Simmons betting on experience at the at tackle, it feels like, especially like, you probably don't want every year to have to go find
a pair of tackles.
Yeah, you'd like to be developing from within, right, and having guys that are ready to take over and compete. But in year one, when you step into a situation, I think being able to go find players like Joe Simmons, mm-hmm. Especially if you're right about them, especially if you are, you know, if you correctly believe that these guys can be starters for a high level SEC offense, if you're right about players like that, you know, it's huge to land them in year one as part of a rebuild.
And Alex Golish, you know, was talking about the offensive line. You may not have heard the question, but he was asked about that comment that he'd made jokingly about prayers for the offensive line. But he seemed to like the way the offensive line's coming along. It's good to hear that Stanton Ramil will be back very soon, because they'd like to have him go through practice. But it was interesting. I mean, we talked about it a little earlier, back in hour number one, about some of these players that were targeted and brought in expecting to be competing for, if not being starters, apparently doing a pretty good job of that. And three of the players he mentioned were the three players we had a chance to talk to today. Joe Simmons, Cody Sigler, Deshaun Womack. Those are guys that Alex Golish brought up today when he was asked about players that are taking leadership roles or who have, really shown the ability to really be contributors at the SEC level. We'll get to our first break of hour number two. Love for you to join in. If we have time, we've got some more audio that we can play from after football practice today. But your calls come first here on the Tuesday Drive.
War Eagle, this is Coach Larry Vickers, and you're listening to ESPN.
Welcome back into the Tuesday Drive. Bill and Dan here in the studio. And again, we're going to check in with Jake Crane of Crane & Cone at the bottom of the hour. We let you hear from Alex Golish after Auburn's practice today. It's day four of spring football practice heading up to an A-Day on April the 18th. One of the players that is really being heavily counted on is big Joe Simmons, who projects right now as a starting right tackle. Although, I mean, Stanton Ramil's got to get healthy and get out there and be able to play, or Joe could play left tackle as he did this past year at JMU before transferring in. But Dan had an opportunity to spend a little time along with some of the other reporters over with the big, and he is big, legit transfer tackle.
Already know we've been practicing, working out, so it's finally good to get the pads back on and, you know, get back out there. So it's been good. I'm excited. I think we're making good steps into just being the goal to be the best offense in the country. So I think we're well on our way to that.
Can you feel like it's a step up as far as competition, as far as athleticism?
I mean, yeah, I think the biggest difference is like everyone can rush. You know, everyone, they're not like a good guy on the team. It's like everyone's good, everyone kind of thing. But like, I kind of embrace that, you know. I love the challenge of being able to go against all the guys and everyone giving me work. So that's, I'm excited about the challenge. It is a step up, so.
What's it been like to put a bunch of pieces together on an offensive line group and then try to start to form a bond?
It's definitely tough, you know, because one thing about O-line, you know, chemistry is the biggest part of our lives. So, but I think just the fact that we had the OTAs and just the whole spring ball to like kind of mesh and gel and kind of get to know each other is helping. But even just getting the pads on, getting things, it's good to just get out there and mesh, because you know, we got to play with each other. And I think we're developing that, but it's going to take time. But I think we're getting there.
What sorts of things do you guys do to generate that chemistry between now and the start of the season?
I think it starts with just being cool with each other, hanging out, you know, spending time with each other outside of the facility, and because we're here all the time. But like, just you want to see someone's authentic self, you know, and that kind of helps you go through stuff and going through hard things with people, you know, and seeing stuff and making jokes about it. I think that all plays in the fact of meshing and gelling together, and you just gotta see stuff together, because you know, I might have a word for twist, and I said today to the guys, and I communicated that, and now everyone knows it. So like, you just gotta those little things, but it takes time, you know, but it'll get there.
Good goal. Talking earlier about the you say you're on the voting here. I guess what has that slogan meant to you and this team in the short time that you've been here?
I think it's, you know, your words have power, and what you say you have to do. You know, that's the biggest thing. You don't want to be someone who goes, I'm gonna do this, I'm gonna do this, this is who I am, and then you go out there and don't do it. So you have to live that every day. So I think that's what it means to me. Just be who you say you are. Like, be the guy you say you are, and be the person you tell people you are. Don't be some way that act a different way, or your actions are different than what you say you are. You know, so I think that's what it means to me.
Tell me about you getting recruited out of high school. Do you feel like you were under-recruited and people didn't appreciate you?
I definitely think I was under-recruited out of high school, just because Delaware is a small town, not a lot of football going on up there. But good players, just not a lot of recruited, not a Power 5 school in the area. So, and I just think I didn't really have the connections or like the people, and I didn't really know what to do out of high school. So I think that was a big part of it. But I think it all worked out in the end. You know, I ended up in a good spot.
So. What was JMU like for you? Was it a good experience for you?
It was a great experience. I enjoyed my time there a lot. Like it was so good, like spending the 4 years there and just being a part of a winning culture and knowing what it takes to win every year. It was, and when I went there, it was like that was expected, and I feel like I've kind of developed that apart. Yeah. I know what to expect. I know what it takes to win, so that's why I appreciate it.
Did you go there for Cignetti? I mean, was he?
Yeah, Cignetti recruited me. I played for him for 2 years.
So you're probably not surprised how big of a deal he is now.
Yeah, no, that whole staff is electric, so I appreciate that.
Is there similarities with this staff and with the way he did things? What do you see some similarities there?
Yeah, 100%. Like, Sig is like, is big on like discipline, like everything. Do like everything, MAs or sins, you know, have to be ever like on class, and it was big like accountability stuff. It wasn't called accountability, but same thing. And Golish is big on that, but I think if Golish is that, as well as the team aspect as well, Golish is big on coming together, but also doing what we're supposed to do and doing the right thing all the time. So I think that's definitely, I think
They're very similar, just more personable.
How important is it to learn Byram's tendencies as an offensive lineman and know sort of the way that he's going to play behind this offensive line at quarterback?
I think it's important, just the communication, like, you know, hearing him, this cadence, everything. It's important to you know, get kind of the rhythm with the quarterback. So I think it's coming. I've only gotten reps with Byram pretty much, so, but I think it's, I don't know, I think it's pretty solid.
Joe Simmons, offensive tackle, after day four of practice today, he's pretty engaging young man.
Yeah, I like Joe Simmons. I mean, it's again you know, surface level stuff. And,
yeah, but I mean personable.
Yeah, certainly. And a guy who, you know, seems like he's introspective and bright and thoughtful, which you know, I think can. I don't think it's a prerequisite to be successful on the offensive line. You know, I think if Coach Dunn were here, he would tell us that he's had plenty of guys that weren't.
Didn't have personality at all, or you could maybe couldn't stand to be in the room with them. Yeah. I mean, if they can play, they can play, as long as they don't cause problems.
Yeah, Coach Dunn would tell us he probably had guys that weren't any of those things that found a way to make it work in college football. But certainly, Joe Simmons, someone who has been through a lot in 4 years at JMU, including the college football playoff, right? Like being able to go, you know, all the way to, and that's a team that's done very well in the Sun Belt the last couple of seasons, you know, regular season Sun Belt championship game, and so yeah, he's you know, we were talking about that a little bit, you know, with so Taylor is a Troy guy, mm-hmm. and I've got my ties to Troy University as well, and so we were talking to Joe a little bit about how he's got to rep the Sun Belt, and when he found out we were connected to Troy, you know, he was less warm about, you know, that's
a rival, man.
Yeah, he's excited to represent JMU, and he's excited to advance his career. I don't know if he necessarily wants the entire Sun Belt on his back or anything like that, but no, I like Joe Simmons, and I think that it was smart to go get a couple of guys that you feel like, you know, seemingly project. You know, I think Stanton would be another one where it's like, you went out and got a couple guys that project as starters.
Oh, yes.
At tackle. Mm-hmm. You know, guys that you can feel pretty solid about penciling in. You know, I don't know what the Bill Cameron depth chart looks like right now.
I've got Joe as a starting right tackle.
You got Stanton at left?
Yes, I do. I mean, we'll see. Stanton needs to get out there, though. So, I mean, when we get an opportunity on Thursday morning, it'll be interesting to see, you know, who's lining up. Who's right. Lining up where? I was with a little group that was talking with Deshaun Womack, and he seems now it's early. Again, it's really early, but I mean, seems pretty excited about the talent on defense and playing. You know, he's got Coleman Hutzler as his position coach, who was the Mississippi State defensive coordinator. Of course, DJ Durkin's got Tim Banks back there in the secondary, who was Tennessee's defensive coordinator. But I mean, he really seemed excited about the defensive staff and the potential of this defense this year. He really Womack talked a lot about just the energy and the intensity that there has been, and how he's been pleased with the response of the young guys to the intensity of the coaches here early on. I thought we might as well mention, you know, some of the other guys that Alex Golish singled out today. You know, he was talking, you know, he was asked about, you know, Byram Brown is someone, he said, is not just good. He can, you know, he's elite, and was asked about any other players that are approaching that. He said, look, it's nobody is. Basically, he wound up by saying nobody is at this point, because it's day four of spring. But he mentioned the players that we talked to, along with Chaz Nimrod, who we spoke to the other day, the receiver who I think everyone is looking to be a breakout player in the SEC. He was a guy that was the number four receiver at Tennessee before he went to South Florida, and was off to a great start last year at South Florida before an injury ended his season. But he mentioned a few guys on defense. Mentioned Elijah Melendez, new boy Fagans, Eric Winters, some of the guys that are really stepping up here early on in spring practice.
Yeah, I feel like it's going to be word and deed, right? Like a lot of it's going to be like, I mean, and he mentioned he shouted out Champ Anthony.
Yes, he did.
It's like Champ,
not even able to practice yet, but being a leader.
Yeah, and Sylvester Smith, I believe, got a mention as well, and he talks about like some of the holdovers from last year's team being guys that he hopes can be particularly vocal and particularly effective leaders. Jeremiah Cobb is someone that he's sort of he mentioned, and I think if you've met Jeremiah, if you've interacted with him, like you could see how like maybe being like Jeremiah spent time next to Damari for a couple of years, and Damari Alston was very vocal, and Damari Alston was very boisterous and sort of outwardly projected his confidence. Jeremiah Cobb, I think, has always been a little bit quieter.
He's more reserved.
Yeah, and now still a very effective football player and still an excellent teammate, highly regarded, but not someone who's going to necessarily have the loudest voice in the room. And, you know, Alex Golish talked about wanting to bring more of that vocal leadership out of Jeremiah because he's so credible, because he's so respected by everyone else, and he's accomplished as much in an Auburn uniform as anyone on the team.
Especially, but definitely offensively.
Yeah, yes. I mean, yes, you've got some good players coming back on defense too. But like, I mean, Jeremiah Cobb is like of the returners, he probably had the best 2025 season of anyone coming back in
on
an Auburn uniform.
You got X.
Yeah, that's true. You're offensively. Yeah, offensive players. Yeah. You're right. You've got a couple of players who had excellent seasons last year and are returning and you know that linebacker room. You're right. You've got Xavier.
There are a few guys that get mentioned there in that linebacker room. That linebacker room is special. I mean, because you know we talked about DeMarcus Riddick getting being healthy and could help Juice out as a pass rush, but Juice Diaz got
Juice
mentioned. Jeff Womack mentioned him today. Mm-hmm. He mentioned Juice
and Golish mentioned who is
Melendez.
Champ Anthony trying to bring leadership out of Melendez?
Yeah.
Was that the
mm-hmm.
were those the two players he mentioned in that regard?
But when he was asked about the players that have shown that ability, he mentioned Melendez. So, some bright spots here early on in spring. We need to get to our bottom of the hour break because it's time for us to check in with Jake Crane from Crane & Company on the other side. Stick with us. Dan here in the studio as we continue with the show, having fun here. We're going to check in with Jake Crane of Crane & Cone here momentarily. We had him on the line, and a little difficulty there, and lost that. So we'll get Jake back, and we will talk to him about the NCAA basketball tournament, Auburn basketball, and probably a little baseball and maybe even football as well. As we welcome in our good friend from Crane and Cone, Jake Crane, here on the Tuesday Drive. Hey, Jake, how you doing, man?
Oh, I'm doing good, guys. Appreciate y'all having me.
Oh, absolutely! What a fun time of year it is. I mean, with the NCAA men's tournament, men and women down to the Sweet 16. We've got
Jake. There's been belly aching about the lack of Cinderellas. I thought that the first 4 days of
the
men's tournament just totally delivered again. Like, this is one of the best times of the year to be a sports fan, and one of the best times of the year to be a college basketball fan. We sort of went around the room yesterday and shared like the moments that we think we'll remember the most from that first four, and my answer, even though it you know the buzzer beater that wasn't right, like that Tyler Tanner shot against Nebraska.
How did it not go in?
Yeah, you're not kidding. It was right. It was exactly where you would put a ball. I mean, you walk up and put it off the, you know, off the square there on the glass, that's where it's going to go in. I guess it was so far that it was a little too hard, because I mean that shot looked dead. Just looked dead on.
I'll tell you what else, Jake.
It reminded me of that Gordon Hayward one in the national championship game that kind of was the same one. I mean, made you think God was a Nebraska fan, but then you watch him play football and realize I guess they just got lucky. But I think when we talk about the mid-major, I think they're two different kind of arguments, right? The mid-major argument and then I agree with you guys. I thought the first 4 days were awesome. I mean, you cannot have Cinderellas and still have great games. I always err on the side of I would just rather have great games. If a Cinderella's in it, that's fantastic. You know, you look at a team like High Point, and yes, they're a mid-major, but then you look at their budget and you look at just look at the campus. If you've never seen pictures of High Point's campus, you need to Google them. I think it'll make a lot more sense to why they were able to put together the team that they were able to. But, you know, it's kind of part of it. And again, in that same breath, I just watched Indiana go 16-0 and win a national championship in football. So I think multiple things can be true at once. You know, I think the Miami-Ohio story was cool. They beat SMU, and then you saw what happened when they played Tennessee. But I always err on the side of I would just rather have really good games. I think when you look at the college football playoff, we shouldn't have had two group of five teams in. It feels like you're trying to force Cinderella at that point. You just got to let Cinderella kind of happen organically. But I have no complaints after the first 4 days of the tournament. And I look at these matchups in the Sweet 16, and I mean, you know, what else could you ask for? I mean, there's some elite matchups we're going to watch starting Thursday.
I will say I am adamant. Like, do not, because I've heard some people throw this out there in the last week or so. Do not try to take mid-majors out of the NCAA tournament. The thought that, like, oh, well, you don't need some of these 15 and 16 seeds. Every conference doesn't need to be represented in the NCAA tournament. I do think that's one of the really cool things about the NCAA tournament is that every conference has a team in, and every team, in theory, you know, there's 360-something D1 teams in men's basketball. Everyone's got a path to that 68-team field.
Yeah, that doesn't mean that they're going to get to the Final Four or win a title or anything, but, yeah, they're deserving of being there, and they can be very competitive early on.
And I'll tell you what, this year wasn't really, like, unless, I mean, look, if it's all bean counters, if it's all money, that's one thing. But on merit, this year didn't really strengthen the argument that we need a bigger field, right? Like, it didn't really feel like
you need a bigger field. Why would you touch something that's perfect? I will say, if you're going to make any change, I think if you win the regular season, you should get the automatic bid, not the conference tournament. And if you got any argument with that, then just look at Duke, who won the ACC championship game and didn't make the college football playoff, but they didn't deserve to make the college football playoff. So I think the regular season winner should be in.
You're right. I mean, that's the grind that these teams go through to try to prove that they're good enough, I believe.
Does the tournament become just totally unnecessary, the conference tournament become totally unnecessary if it's not for the auto bid? That's the only counter I would make to that, because I agree with you. I think that the regular season titles are probably undervalued around the sport.
Well, you get a ring. You know, you get a championship. That's why they made the conference tournament. I mean, to be able to still win a championship and get a ring if you don't win the regular season. I do think, you know, if you have a situation where, and it could come up, we've seen it before, where teams may tie for the regular season title, maybe the winner of the – whoever goes further in the conference tournament then is the team that gets in between those tied teams. But I just find it hard to accept that you go through, like Bill said, the grind of that schedule. I mean, you covered it, Dan. I mean, you know what that grind is. And then all of a sudden, you just got to put, you know, four games together and you make the NCAA tournament. So I think the regular season champs should be Bucky McMillan agrees.
I'll tell you what, the compromise I would propose would be in one-bid leagues, they should look to the Sun Belt and that Mortal Kombat bracket where the regular season champion is in the semifinal of the conference tournament and basically everyone else has to earn their way. You know, playing every day.
That's why they do it.
I think that's the because I would agree with you. I would agree with you, but I would also say, like, do you need a conference tournament if you're going to give the auto bid to your regular season champion? And maybe it's a money maker for the league and whatever. But so the compromise would be you need to really really value, like, you need to remember, prioritize what happened in the regular season when you do these conference tournaments and things like that. But I think there's
sometimes it depends on how big your conference is too, though.
How about this, Jake, for this NCAA tournament? I think it's a little bit of a surprise that the SEC has this many teams in the Sweet 16?
And based Florida's on, not one of them?
Based, maybe it's a bigger surprise that Florida isn't one of them. What do you think of the matchups for the SEC in the Sweet 16? And is there anyone that you think can maybe keep dancing?
Man, I like Arkansas over Arizona.
A lot of people like Arizona over the field.
Yeah, well, look, I like Michigan over the field, to be honest with you. If I was going to take one team in the field, I just think Arkansas, they have everything, right? Not saying that they're better than Arizona, but if anybody was going to be able to take Arizona out, I think it's this Arkansas team. You know, I did, and it's on video, so you can prove it. I had Texas making the Elite Eight, so I'm not shocked by that. When you look at their path, I think they can run with Purdue. You know, Dalen Swain's a heck of a player. Pope can do it. They got that huge Lithuanian monster down low that's starting to figure it out. Bama just
–
Michigan's just a problem, man. I mean, Bama's going to have to – shoot like they did against Texas Tech and hope they can be even on the board, because this Michigan team not only can shoot, I believe Auburn fans know better than anybody, what they did to Auburn at the beginning of the year is close to a crime. If you go back at, what was it, the new era, the players era, whatever they call it.
Yeah, that was the game. I mean, Auburn took a couple of non-conference beatings. Arizona got them in Tucson. And
Purdue in Indianapolis, too. You know,
you're referring to Auburn-Michigan, the second game of the players era, although Auburn did turn around a day later and beat St. John's, who I think's got
a shot
that Duke game.
Yeah, and, you know, you look at the rest of the matchups. Florida being out of it is just, you know, why would you press there? I don't understand why they press there at the end of the clock. But look, I mean, Todd Golden, he's got a natty. I'm not going to sit here and second guess him for too long. But man, when I look at him, you know, I like Tennessee over Iowa State. Especially with Jefferson being hurt, and Miletich is good. Lipsy. You know, he had a lot of success against Auburn 2 years ago out there in Hawaii, even though they took that L. But I think Tennessee moves on. I think Arkansas beats Arizona. And I got Texas over Purdue. I don't see anybody beating Michigan. That's why I picked them to win the whole thing. I tell you another interesting one, man. How about Iowa, Nebraska in the Sweet 16?
Yeah, no kidding. Who would? Yeah, that's – all right,
and with no Florida in that region anymore, it feels pretty wide open. I know there are folks who really feel strongly about the winner of Illinois Houston going to the Final Four, but I think Nebraska can really play, Jake. I mean, that's a team that when their offense is going, like they can hang with just about anybody.
Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, people look at them as a Cinderella. They're a four seed that's done it all year long. It's just people haven't believed it.
Yeah, and you know, the thing about Nebraska is they don't do anything super special. They just understand who they are. I think they live and die with Stanford, the guy that actually transferred from Iowa, whose brother's in the league now. They're not overtly athletic. They're not huge. They don't shoot it incredibly well. They're just feisty. That's what they are. And you look at Iowa, Iowa's going to slow you down. We know their point guard, the kid who came over from Bennett Sturts, I think it was Drake, who actually went like 0-for-9 from 3 against Florida, and they still won. That shows you kind of the depth that Iowa has. It's just it's cool to see this matchup, man. It really is.
Jake, I mean, there's so much going on. I mean, we've got college baseball, you know, the football spring practice. See some news from Auburn today that Chris Murray has been granted, just coming this afternoon. Chris Murray granted an additional year of eligibility. That's big for Alex Golish as they look to add another edge.
Yeah, look, we'll on the end of the line of scrimmage, we'll take all the help we can get, and I'm sure Coach Golish will too. You can only take – everybody's excited about getting back on the field, but if you actually watch – the clips from Auburn, and you listen to what the coaches and the players are saying, it does feel different. The vibe is a lot different. I don't think it's just like a new car smell, because again, you know, Golish knows what he's doing. He brought over guys at important spots that are going to help the culture of this team. It eventually, you know, football is cyclical. Eventually it was going to turn. it just feels like maybe it's starting to turn, and I'm starting to get more confidence and more confidence in this group, and excited to see what they become, and we'll see, you know, kind of the injury situation coming out of spring. But it does feel like maybe there's a corner being turned, or maybe I'm just optimistic after so many years it feels like wandering the desert.
I think it's a positive start is definitely what you can say to that. Jake, always great to be able to have you on with us. What you got going on? What can people look forward to upcoming on Crane and Cone?
Oh, man. Well, we did a big Sweet 16 preview that's out, that's doing really well. We did our debate series, Michigan-Ohio State, we dropped today. But tomorrow we actually have Josh Pate on, and we're talking about the year one coaches in the SEC and Alex Golish and Auburn. So I think Auburn fans, you go to YouTube, it's Crane and Cone, C-R-A-I-N and Cone. It's a great discussion. We have a lot of fun doing it, so come check us out.
Looking forward to it, Jake. Thanks again, man. Have a great week.
Hey, y'all be good.
Jake Crane joining us from Crane and Cone each Tuesday afternoon. We need to get to our final break of the show. Stick with us here on The Drive.
Experience and knowledge from the pros.
Welcome back in. Final couple of minutes here of on the Tuesday Drive. Our thanks to Jake Crane for joining us. Andy Burcham joining us in hour number one. Hope you had a chance to catch all that. And if you missed anything, you can check out the podcast of The Drive.
Yeah, we will. Of course, you can also listen to Andy on the Auburn Sports Network tonight, live from Montgomery, Auburn.
Yeah, you can flip over here in just a second. I mean, we'll give you permission. You can go ahead and do it now.
That's right.
Hear the final little bit of the pregame as Auburn getting ready to take on South Alabama.
Bill mentioned the podcast. Podcasts of The Drive available wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Go to ESPNAU.com and use the Podcast Center or search for The Drive with Bill Cameron on your favorite podcasting platform. Yeah, great stuff from Andy in hour number one. Jake just finished up. Tomorrow should have Jason.
Jason Caldwell, Adam Cole joining us tomorrow on The Drive. We'll get their thoughts on, you know, looking at back at the baseball game from tonight, previewing baseball for this weekend, basketball tomorrow night against Nevada, more football practice, Auburn adding – bringing back another player. He was on the list for pro day today.
How about that?
Chris Murray was. Apparently he gets word today that he has been granted an extra year of eligibility, and that helps that edge room that Deshaun Womack was talking about today.
Yeah,
so a lot of things we'll be talking about tomorrow on The Drive. We're out of time, though, here on the Tuesday Drive. Fun show today. We'll talk to you tomorrow. Have a good one, everybody. We are out of here.